Ladies and gentlemen, good day and welcome to LIC conference call on the subject of Indian Embedded Value as of 31st March 2022. We have senior management of LIC led by Shri M. R. Kumar, Chairperson on this call. The senior management team members on the call along with Chairperson are Shri Raj Kumar, Managing Director, Shri Siddhartha Mohanty, Managing Director, Shri B. C. Patnaik, Managing Director, Shri Dinesh Pant, Appointed Actuary and ED Actuarial, Shri K. R. Ashok, ED Actuarial, Shri Sunil Agrawal, Chief Financial Officer, and Shri Sanjay Bajaj, Head Investor Relations. Before we hand over the call to LIC management, as a reminder, all participant lines will be in the listen-only mode, and there will be an opportunity for you to ask questions after the presentation concludes. Should you need assistance during the conference call, please signal an operator by pressing star then zero on your touchtone phone. Please note that this conference is being recorded. We now request the management of LIC to start the call, and I now hand over the conference to Chairperson LIC, Shri M. R. Kumar, for starting the call. Thank you, and over to Chairperson LIC.
Good morning. Dear friends and members of the financial markets, on behalf of Life Insurance Corporation of India, I extend a very warm welcome to all of you. As you are all aware that we have gathered today on this call to present and share the information related to the Indian Embedded Value of LIC of India as on 31st March 2022. While we are in the silent period as per SEBI guidelines, this discussion is being held pursuant to our two press releases and communications given to exchanges on May 30th, 2022 and June 29th, 2022 respectively, regarding completion of IEV determination exercise and the disclosure of the same. In our latest communication, we had mentioned that by July 15th, 2022, we expect the exercise to be completed. We are happy to announce that the IEV determination exercise has been completed and the IEV report issued by Messrs. Milliman Advisors LLP has been adopted by the board on July 14th, 2022, and has also been filed with the stock exchanges. While we acknowledge that this IEV disclosure is delayed as compared to usual market practice, we wish to state that going forward, the IEV will be disclosed on six monthly basis, that is at end of March end and at the end of September end every year. Also that going forward, the IEV shall be disclosed along with the financial results. I will now request Mr. K. R. Ashok, our ED and Head of Actuarial, to run you through the key aspects of the IEV report, and post that we will have the floor open for Q&A.
Good morning. This is K. R. Ashok, Executive Director, Actuarial. I hope you have all seen access to that presentation which we have uploaded in our website. I'll be taking you through that presentation. The presentation is about Indian Embedded Value, how the embedded value is structured, the value of new business margin, and analysis of movement of embedded value and sensitivity analysis, and certain metrics associated with that. The Indian Embedded Value of the corporation has moved from March 20. That was the first point in time that we reported. It has moved from 46,000 to 95,605 at March 21. From there on, due to the bifurcation of fund and the change in pursuant to the amendment in the act, it moved up to 5,39,686, and as at March 22, it is 5,41,492. If we look at, go to the next slide, it's on the embedded value IEV walk. We have, for comparison's sake, we have given the bifurcation impact thereon, and it is to the extent of 3,74,172. The bifurcation impact as at September was 4,14,000 crores. There are other portions, like the value of new business, which added about 7,619 crores. unwinding added about 22,700 crores, and the operating experience variance added 30,684 crores, and there are some change in assumptions, particularly on expenses, which is giving a negative 5,200 crores, and the economic assumptions and the variance gives around 15,936 crores, totaling to 5,41,992 crores. If you look at the buildup of embedded value in the next slide, the free surplus and required capital add up to an ANW of 10,527 crores against 6,361 crores of last year. The PVFP, as I've already mentioned, includes the bifurcation effect. It is 5,47,724 crores as against 1,04,772 crores. And there are set-offs like time value of financial options and guarantees, frictional cost of capital, and CRNHR, which is the cost of residual non-hedgeable risk, totaling about 16,750 crores, and giving a total embedded value of 5,41,492 crores. Now, the next slide is on the value of new business. The value of new business of the corporation at a gross level before TV FOC, frictional cost of capital, and CRNHR. For the current year, it is 9,920 crores as against 6,440 crores of the previous year. The split of line of business wise contribution is also given thereon. We go to the margin. The margin for financial year 22 in the next slide is 15.1%. This is net of TVOC, CRNHR, and frictional cost of capital, as against 9.9% of the previous year. The breakup of the individual line of business is also given. The next slide gives the analysis of movement of IEV. As we have seen in the raindrop chart earlier, the bifurcation impact is 3,74,172, and the other components, which we have already mentioned, is given here. Coming to a closing IEV of 5,41,492. The next slide is on sensitivity analysis. Sensitivity analysis, the key points I would like to mention here is the embedded value is sensitive to the taxation rate and the equity movement, and the sensitivity of taxation rate is 24.3% negative for increase in taxation rate, and it is 6.5% negative for an equity decrease by 10%. The change of new business margin is sensitive, highly sensitive to reference rate, where a decrease in 100 bits of reference rate reduces the margin by 4.7 percentage points. And similar to the embedded value, the taxation also has an impact of reduction of the new business margin by 4.8 percentage points. The next slide gives the APE mix of the corporation. And if we look at the APE mix, we can see that the individual PAR has contributed 66% of the APE, and the non-PAR has contributed 34% in total, compared to 69% of the previous year PAR business and 31% of non-PAR of the last year. The next slide gives the return on ROEV, return on embedded value. The return on embedded value between 21 and 22, you can see clearly that they are not exactly comparable, for the reason that the bifurcation impact comes into play in the year financial year 22. For the financial year 22, the return on embedded value is 11.9%. Thank you.
Sir, shall we open the floor for questions?
Yeah, we can do that.
Thank you very much. We will now begin the question and answer session. Anyone who wishes to ask a question may press star and one on their touchtone telephone. If you wish to remove yourself from the question queue, you may press star and two. Participants are requested to use handsets while asking a question. Ladies and gentlemen, we will wait for a moment while the question queue assembles. Participants, you may press star and one to ask a question. The first question is from the line of Anuj Singla from Bank of America. Please go ahead.
Yeah, good morning, everyone. Thank you very much for the opportunity. So first question with regards to the fund bifurcation impact, it's around 40,700 crores lower versus our disclosures in September. While the Milliman report does talk about a decline in asset value, the equity market hasn't moved over this period in a material way. So can you please elaborate what is driving this?
Yeah, this is Ashok. Actually, what has happened is, it is true that the equity market has not moved much, but what we look at is the composition of our assets, which sit in our balance sheet. And if you want a breakup of how it has moved, it is the equity has contributed about 50% all, and debt has also contributed an equal in amount of fall.
So, but if the equity market has not moved as much, like you said, 20,000 crores might be coming from the equity side. What explains that? Is it the exposure entities have fallen by that amount? The broader market hasn't fallen, but some of the exposure entities have fallen. There has been a decline over this period. Is that the correct understanding?
Yes, that is the correct understanding. That's what I said. The our portfolio has moved because of the composition of the specific assets.
Okay. I get it. And the second question is on the VNB margin, sir. There seems to be a significant improvement and pickup in the second half of the financial year, last year, FY22. These are all implied numbers, full year minus the first half disclosures. So, as per my calculation, VNB margin was around 18% for the second half of FY22. And when I look at the product mix, that doesn't seem to have changed materially. The non-par is up by around 95 basis points in the second half over first half. Can you elaborate what is driving this? And is this a number where we can build on for the forecast as well? Is it something, or there is some kind of one-off in this number?
Yeah, this is Ashok, Executive Director. Actually, I'll be responding to this question. If we look at the VNB, the movement of VNB, it can be broadly classified into some categories. The major contribution is due to the business mix. Because if you look at the business mix from 21 to 22, I'm talking about 21 to 22, which is reported in the numbers are reported in the Milliman report. The major contribution is due to business mix, which contributes about 35% of the change. And then the next is we have added some products under the new for the year 22 compared to year 21, because for the year 21 we have only modeled 94 products, and for year 22 we have modeled all the products. So that addition of products has contributed about 29% of the VNB. And then the next major thing is the RFR increase. The RFR has increased over the most of the duration by about 50 bips, and that has contributed to that. And added to that is the volume increase, because there is a volume increase in APE, which has contributed about 13% of the increase. Yeah, these are the major contributors to that. And then if you look at the set-offs, because there's a set-off last year and a set-off this year, the set-off is it's a minor one. It's only about contributing about only 1% of the change.
Sir, if I specifically talk about the second half over first half, possible to give something similar for that for these two comparable periods as well?
No, I think currently we have only the information from March to March. From September to March, we have to work on that, and we'll get back to you later.
Okay, fine, sir. So lastly, there is a charge of 5,243 crores related to change in operating assumptions. I think you mentioned about expenses there. Can you please elaborate, give a bit more color on that?
Yeah, actually, what happened is expense analysis is performed by the corporation on a quarterly basis, and the latest expense analysis is considered for the embedded value calculation. So, based on that, the March expense experience is factored in that, and that is the major reason for decrease in the 5,000 crores decrease in the embedded value.
Any major heads you can point to, sir, in terms of expenses where we saw the most escalation?
I say it is, if you look at the expenses of the corporation can be broadly split into split fixed expenses and variable expenses. And we see that there is an overall growth in the expenses. And those expenses, as per the results of the analysis, we have factored into that in the new assumptions for the year 22. And that is what is reflecting the decrease in the embedded value to the tune of 5,300 crores.
Okay. Correct, sir. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Deepika Mundra from JP Morgan Chase. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. Good morning, and thanks for the opportunity. So just one question. Could you kindly explain as to how we should look at the unwind in the year? Because if we take the fund bifurcation amount in the base embedded value, it seems that the unwind rate is significantly lower at 4.8%. So could you kindly talk about that, please?
Yeah, sure. Actually, if we look at, this is Ashok, Executive Director, actually. If we look at the unwind rate consists of three components. The first component is with reference to the reference rate, and the second one is difference between the expected rate and the reference rate, and the final one goes into the investment variance assumption, variance component, which is the difference between the assumption and the actual. Now, when we are talking about unwinding, we are talking about the first two items which gets captured in the IEV walk. Let me give you the breakup so that we will have a clear picture on that going forward. See, if you look at the reference rate gives an unwind of around 4,700 crores, and the expected excess over the real world return gives around 17,000 crores, giving a total of 21,000 crores. Now, if we are looking at this 21,000 crores over the total, considering even the bifurcation impact, which comes to around the opening, restated opening, will come to around 4,70,000 crores, then you are looking at it from that percentage. Am I right?
Yes, that's correct. Yes, yes.
Yeah. See, when we going forward, what happens is this bifurcation impact will stay there. Right. So the next year, the opening balance will become 541. So you will have to look at these numbers from that point of view.
I get that, sir, that the next year the opening balance will be 541. But for this year itself, if you take the restated opening balance, it seems that the unwind rate is significantly lower. Is that the right way to look at it, or would you look at the opening balance as the erstwhile EV, which was 95,000 crores?
I'm Dinesh Mant, Appointed Actuary Director. Let me clarify a little bit on this. See, these ratios, when we see, we will have to see, if, for example, you know, if we simplistically see, it will be seen that last year it was some operating profits of 35%, this is 11%. And somebody would feel it has come down. Basically, it has not come down. If you see as per the numbers, they've increased from 17,000 to almost 55,000 crores. The issue is that corporation wants to be transparent about it. And we have, you know, for example, when this ratio of 35% the previous year have been shown, the base was around 45,000 crores or so, right? So we just can't be led by the ratio. We have to see the numbers involved there. here, as Mr. Ashok was clarifying, in order to ensure that consistency, because every time the analyst, everybody will be comparing from year to year basis, and at that point of time, the initial points may be forgotten sort of thing. So if the same number which you mentioned about has reduced, suppose we remove this effect of, you know, this 374, and then we just take the amount, it would be significantly higher number, 25% to 30%. So here what we are trying to do is, we are trying to, you know, in fact, it's like a readjusted ratio which has been calculated, considering that next year also, this number will be there. Now, this ratio for LIC would be different from a different company. At times, people tend to compare because of the constitution of the total embedded value. In LIC's embedded value PFP, large portion is also coming from the, you know, legacy release in terms of market value of these assets, which is strength for the corporation coming from the past, which is possibly may not be there with somebody. So because of the large base size, this ratio may look like. But if we see this ratio, because if the unwind and the source of unwind are compared between each other, then the ratios will be significantly high. So this is how we want to actually analyze an entity and see the ratios. It will depend because we cannot, you know, ignore the constitution of the components and then only we'll have to compare.
Okay, sir. Understood. Thank you so much. I'll get back in the queue.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Jayant from Credit Suisse. Please go ahead.
Thank you for the opportunity. Sir, two questions. One is in the operating experience EV movement, we see newly model plans and others almost contributing around 31,000 crores. Can you elaborate a little bit on these two? And follow-up to that would be in the newly model plans, can you talk about these products and their margin and how much business are you currently doing in these products?
This is Ashok, ED Actuarial. I'll be taking that question. When we went for IPO, we have modeled only 94 products, and subsequent to that, we took up the project of completing the entire product suite of LIC into the profit system, and that was successfully completed by March 22. And due to that, the embedded value has increased by 14,300 crores in the current year. If we look at the newly modeled products, actually when we did the 94, when we selected the 94 products, we counted on the contribution of those products in reserves, and that was taken to be more than 90% of the reserve, considering the materiality which we have, the board of the corporation has decided for the purpose of IPO. Now, when we have modeled all the other products, if we look at the profitability of these products vis-a-vis the base, now if we take this as representing 10%, then effectively the total will come to in proportion, it will be in proportion with this or slightly more than in proportion with the opening balance of 95. So effectively what happens is there is some, because there are basically impact of the RFR impact will also be there in this, because it is very difficult to cull out the all the experiences separately. And that is one of the reason why the new products, when it is shown separately, looks to be higher. And one more thing you need to understand is, if these new products were included in the previous period, then it would have contributed to others like persistency, mortality and expenses, which is now included, everything is included under the newly modeled plans. So that is also one of the reason why it looks slightly more than the overall proportion. And the next question on others, which is around 16,571 crores, the major portion of 50% of that comes from data purification exercise, which we have done and we are continuously doing as a part of the corporation's approach towards data purity. And the second one is the general release from the global reserves, which is contributing about 50% on that.
Try to understand, this is one time, sir? Both of these items? Except the data purification part?
See, the global reserves, actually what happens is each year when we do the valuation, we do the statutory valuation on a policy basis. Certain parameters, certain risks are captured at a global level and it could not be allocated to the individual policy level. So those are a global reserves that we set aside. When we do the embedded value calculation, the risks are captured in a different way. Therefore, what happens, many of these global reserves gets released. So this is the difference between the stat and the best estimate process. And this, if you notice, this will be the incremental global reserves release will be there year on year.
Just to elaborate on that, Dineshman's here. In fact, you raise a point whether this is going to be one time or it is going to be repeated. Let's appreciate one thing here, that actually, you know, when EV includes the value of VNB also. So when we say new products have been modeled into it, naturally there's a component of VNB also into it. For example, let's say, suppose, I'm just giving a very, rough estimate to you. Say, let's say, in a particular line of business, the EV is 20,000 crores. And then it also includes the VNB of 1,500 crores or say 2,000 crores from the last year. That portion of VNB will continue to come in the future years also. To give an example, for the participating business, which is a long-term business for the corporation, and also because the composition of the, the distribution of surplus coming out of it, say the VNB portion is say 4 to 5% of the EV. When we move toward non-par, saving type of products, because of the shorter life cycle, because of their immediacy from start from today, the component of VNB would be something around, say, maybe 8% or so. If we go into group type of products, the VNB composition to the EV ratio can be something around 12 to 14%. So it would depend upon, for example, in case of LICs, like, many products which have been, modeled now, for example, they might be new, they are new products. So new products means their VNB to EV ratio is almost similar, because if the product, for example, has been launched in a particular last year only, then possibly its EV and VNB would be same. So the release from VNB from those products are going to be tremendous. So to be able to say that this is a one-time thing may not be fully, appropriate in the sense. It would depend upon which life cycle, which part of this product has been launched, for what duration, the value of EV, and what is the ratio of VNB to EV for those products.
Understood. And the last question on the non-par products we just touched upon. Can you tell us a little bit about your strategy on how you will scale up? Because as of now, we can see that it's not been very meaningful yet, the improvement. So what are your strategy and how do you plan to incentivize the agents to push more of the non-par products?
Kumar, chairperson here. Very sorry, we won't be able to take that question because, we are in the silent period, as I mentioned in the beginning, and it will be forward-looking. And that's what I think. Maybe in the earnings call that we have after the results, financial results, we'll be able to talk about that.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nitin Agarwal from Motilal Oswal. Please go ahead.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for the opportunity. So, firstly, just to clarify, like the VNB margin improvement that you've reported, is this sustainable? And the improvement that we were expecting anyhow because of the change in the distribution surplus will further add to it over the coming years? Is that a fair understanding?
Just to respond slightly to that question, the point is whether it's sustainable or whether it will be sustained and grow. I think nobody can exactly talk sustainable, of course. Sustained or improved, only future will tell. But definitely, as we are responding, that as long as the strategic, for corporation, ultimate aim, or for any insurer for that matter, the ultimate is to create higher value of VNB, right, in the interest of the shareholder, but not coming at the cost of the policyholders, because the entire business has to go, only one element cannot be the criteria. So definitely, a corporation is there to create value for the policyholders as well as for the shareholders. And the approach and the every strategy will be in order to grow. That goes without saying, because that's going to be there. Ultimately, as Mr. Ashok had already clarified also, it depends on various elements, the actual business pickup, business mix, the way the markets behave, and all those things. So it's very much sustainable. And what numbers will come, we'll discuss in the next meetings when we reach. Sure.
Sure, sir. And secondly, on the sensitivity, if I look at, while the EV sensitivity to market movements is broadly unchanged from the last September 21 disclosures, but the VNB sensitivity to rising interest rates has moderated. So what has really driven this change?
See, as long as far as the sensitivity is concerned, EV sensitivity for equity is more or less similar to what we see in the post-bifurcation of funds. It has not changed much. In case of VNB, actually the sensitivity, because what happens is when we test the sensitivity, we are testing the sensitivity from the current base rate. When the base rate itself changes, the sensitivity movement will also change. And you may be aware that 50 bits of reference rate has changed. It has increased over the last year. So the base, since the base rate has changed, the sensitivity impact also will be, we expect that to be different.
Okay. And so lastly, while you did explain on the unwind, but what sort of discount rate one should now build for FY23, because there are no precedents as such, and this number is a pretty critical when it comes to evaluating the EV or assessing the EV for the next year. So what is the discount rate that one should broadly work with for FY23 and beyond? Any color if you can provide around that?
See, one, Dineshman, here I will, just drawing upon right from your previous question also. When we talk about, change in VNB, we have to take cognizance of the fact that as far as EV is there, equity changes are going to be a larger part of, sensitivity. For VNB portions, possibly the interest rate becomes more significant, there. And we have seen, more significant change in interest rate. So that's causing the larger change in the sensitivity there. As far as for future discounting is there, at any point of valuation, whenever it will be done, what are the interest rates, what is the view of the actuary at that point of time, what is the outcome of the assumptions which have been taken, whether they are sustained or there is a revision which is required. So it depends on a couple of factors and the combination of them, whether that demands a change in the view of the assumption settings or, at that point of time. So objective and subjective criteria based on the judgment and the experience analysis which emerges at that point of time would decide what rates would be taken.
Okay. Sure, sir. Thanks so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Shyam Srinivasan from Goldman Sachs. Please go ahead.
Good morning and thank you for taking my question. Just the first one is on slide 7 where you have given us the new business margins across the products. So PAR business gross margins have gone from 11 to 13.55. So I'm just referring to that. If I remember when we had the disclosure around the last time, when there was a base case for fiscal 20, there was an alternate case. I think that those margins were coming to 12.5, where the PAR surplus actually moves from whatever 5 to 10% and stuff. So this has come higher. I know there is an element of net versus gross, but just trying to understand how has that moved versus, say, the alternate one scenario that we had earlier?
This is Ashok. See, the alternate scenario considers only one aspect of that, which is the distribution part. But whereas the actual calculation considers all the components, that also includes the RFR change. The RFR change has the important effect on the improvement that we see in the margins.
Got it. So, Ashok, so we can fairly assume that since it's not fully, the surplus is fully not moved to 10 across the board, there is potential accretion even here on from a distribution perspective. Forget the mix perspective. Maybe the distribution is still yet to play. Would that be a fair observation to make?
Yeah,
you're absolutely right. Because if you see in the scenario one in the last presentation, which you rightly pointed out, even base value which was around 4,100 was around 5,199. So it was clearly shown at that point of time just to give a clear indication that the value for VNB, which has been done say 2 years back, with the expectation of 5% would be different. Value of VNB which has been done on this transition stage where 92.5 and then shifting towards 90 would be different. And value of new business which is right now, because it is the present value of that 1 year's impact is going to be significant, that 2.5%, 2.5%. So something which is done after 2025. That value of new business will straight away, you know, be, you know, 10% and all those things. For, of course, non-par it is already 100%. So that gets reflected here, almost 1,000 crores, 2,000 crores difference. I will not go into numbers because that will again depend on the volume of the business and the construct of the business. But you're absolutely right. It will impact and that will continue to be. So value of new business will increase also because of the, you know, business which is done in that year, next year and this year.
Got it, sir. Very helpful. Second question is again back on slide 10, and I'm not looking for a forward-looking statement here, but more on the what went right in fiscal 22 and what were the challenges, or especially on individual non-par, right? So if you see the growth rates, 13% for individual par, it's faster than individual non-par. If you remember in the in our roadshows, we were talking about individual non-par to grow faster. So maybe some of the challenges, maybe it's early days, but if you can help us dissect, you know, how it is. I'm not looking for a growth guidance for next year, but just the qualitative aspects, sir.
Dinesh Pant here again. See, yes, we can definitely talk about what went right and what helped us. Definitely a very absolutely clear-cut strategy, a clear-cut determination on the part of the corporation to ensure, you know, best value for the shareholders. In the last year, you would see LIC has launched many products, which are non-par products. So typically now we have bag of almost four. You see, this is the first time at the end of this year when in the construct, if you see look at the product mix of the corporation, out of, say, 33 products, more than 50% products are non-par products. We have now got into channel-specific products for the first time, you know. We have for banker channel, we have got channel-based product. We have got almost very competitive products, you know, in the non-par segment. So all these things, you know, there's a clear cut and so this all has helped us. And that will continue. Again, corporation continue to look around all these things as per this emerging business strategy. Yes.
Got it, sir. My last question is on slide 11. EVOP, 55,000 crores. I'm just trying to add which are the numbers in your thing that you've added to reach that. I broadly just added, but I couldn't reach the number. Is there some adjustment I need to do to reach the 55,779 number?
This is Ashok. If you, I think you have access to this Milliman report. And the if you analysis of movement, if you go to that page, there is an item called EV operating earnings, which is that number 55,779.
Correct, sir, but I'm looking at your whatever EV walk. So I will add unwind, I will add VNB.
Hmm.
What else? Below that, the variance we are adding, I'm just...
I can tell you, it's VNB, we have to add VNB. We have to add unwind, and then we have to add the operating variance, which is persistency, mortality expenses, newly modeled plans, and there's another component, and then the change in operating assumptions. If you add all of that, you'll get 55,779.
Perfect, sir. Thank you so much, and all the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nidesh from Investec India. Please go ahead.
Thanks for the opportunity, sir. So firstly, this newly modern plan, now incrementally they are part of VNB, right? So they will not come into EV walk. Is that right understanding?
They will continue to, you said about the newly modern product?
Yeah, newly modern plans.
Once the products have been modeled, they are part of the EV. And the EV, again, is something, you know, what EV reflects is nothing but the present value of the shareholder for the existing business. So even, you know, when you go to next period of time, say next quarter or next year, at that point of time, the composition of the business would again change because some of the policies will be out of the book, some of the policies new would be added. So these policies, as long as they are part of the, you know, the overall business, existing business of the corporation, they will continue to be part of the EV also.
So they are not part of VNB? Are these not part of VNB?
So what happens, VNB, in fact, what happens? For example, these newly modern products, they have become part of EV. Now, VNB reflects the business which has been done in the last year. So whatever new business will be done under these products in the next year will become VNB for the next year. That's what I was trying to, you know, give idea before, that we have to see newly modeled products. If they are new products, their VNB could be very much nearer to the EV value. So it depends upon the overall new business done under a policy to the ratio of overall business done under that policy over the lifetime of a business. So they will continue to contribute in that proportion to VNB also, unless they are closed products. So those products which are just closed for sales do not contribute to VNB. All the products which are available for sales continue to contribute towards VNB.
Because we don't see such line item for the other listed peers. My understanding was on this that when we did the IPO, we modeled 93% of the products, or 94 products we modeled, which represents around 93% of APE.
Right.
Now, the unmodeled products which we have not modeled as of September 21, that have also been modeled now.
Yes.
So, if all the products are now modeled, now why should we get this newly modeled plans for FY23?
Because in FY23 there will be again new modeled products also. New products will also be introduced.
New products will be introduced, they will come into this. Okay.
Yes, they will be the new products which will come there.
Yeah, understood.
Right.
This is one. Second is, sir, in your APE, can you give a bit more detailed bifurcation? How much is retail protection APE for FY21, FY22? How much is group protection APE in FY21-22? And how much is individual annuity APE for FY21-22?
One minute. I mean, see, largely around 68%, I will just give the figure. Yeah. See, as far as the APE constitution was there, around 33,000 crore was coming from individual participating business in the last year. Individual non-participating business around 2,500 crores plus, and group business was 14,000 crores or so.
So, I was looking for more detailed data because other listed players report a very detailed APE breakup. We get how much is retail protection, how much is annuity, how much is group protection. If that data is available, that will be useful, sir.
See, largely I can just suggest to you, see, there has been growth overall. In certain cases, there has been conscious decisions which have been there, and we can provide the data subsequently also.
Okay. And so lastly, in this year, we have not paid any dividend. Because in EV walk, I couldn't see any dividend item. And going forward, what will be the dividend payout policy?
As of now, actually what happens that, you know, see, if we also need to understand one thing, all this, because you are an analyst, you would better understand these things. All the financials of a company have to be seen. EV typically represents the shareholder value for the shareholders, right? We are aware from the financial statements that the board has recommended certain amounts, which is subject to approval of AGM. So that's a decision to be finalized, which can only be crystallized, finalized, and said taken. As far as it is currently, it is a recommendation after the AGM is there. So from the financials, what amount has been recommended is already available.
Okay. And going forward, the dividend payout ratio will be similar to this year or any?
That's a decision to be decided by the board as per the policy, dividend policy for the corporation.
Okay, sir. Thank you. That's it for me. Thank you so much.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Dhaval from DSP Mutual Fund. Please go ahead.
Hi, sir. A few questions. First is, sir, in the EV sensitivity, we have 6.5% impact for a 10% movement in equity. From an understanding perspective, where would this impact be highest within the EV walk? And if you could specifically quantify the impact on unwind. So hypothetically, your portfolio is down 10% next year. How much would be the impact on the unwind number if you could give broad, guidance around or some expectation around that would be useful, just from an understanding perspective. So that's
I'm Ashok. I'll be taking this question. Actually, it is true that the sensitivity of IEV for to equities 6.5% for a fall of 10% in equity. If you look at the walk, there is one item called economic variance, and any market movement changes to EV is captured in that item.
Okay, so there will be no impact on unwind rate?
unwind rate depends on what happens if at all there is any change in the interest rate environment, which macro which moves in case if it moves along with the equity market, then there will be an impact. But considering the equity alone, there won't be any impact on the unwind.
Got it. So the second question was, if you could quantify the VNB margin improvement, how much of that was, from the interest rate increase? Since we have a positive sensitivity to rising rates, if you could just quantify for FY22 or second half of FY22, how much of that was due to rate change?
This is Ashok once again. Actually earlier I have already explained what are the rough contribution of each of the elements for the change in the VNB. The RFR impact is contributes to around 14% of the increase.
Got it. Sorry, I missed that. Got it. And sir, the third question was relating to PV NBP margin. We had provided that in September to be about 1.3%. What is it for FY22? If you could give that data point.
Actually, that ratio, which is the present value of new business premium. You are referring to that, na? The
correct, the margin,
PV NBP margin. Actually, what happens now, that is normally calculated as a part of disclosure to IPO, and it is normally not calculated as a part of a regular disclosure, sir. Therefore, that is one of the reasons why we have not disclosed it.
Understood, sir. Qualitatively, would it be similar to where it was in September? Because the reason I ask is, if you look at your VIF or your PVFP growth, that's broadly flattish from September. Just from that perspective, I'm just trying to understand if the margin has increased or remained same.
See, we have to look at what goes into that calculation. Actually, the denominator captures the entire present value of the premiums that is expected to be received. So the discount rate plays a major role in that. So when the discount rate changes, it has an impact on that. So we know that the discount rate has increased. So to that extent, the denominator would have decreased. If the amount has been calculated, the denominator would have decreased.
Got it. Sir, lastly, if you could just quantify the dividend amount that will get, deducted from EV in next year based on shareholder approval, what is the expected dividend amount to be deducted? Just a data-giving question. Thanks.
Hi, this is Sunil Agarwal. The dividend amount should be around 948 crores.
Got it. Thank you and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Dipanjan Ghosh from Citi. Please go ahead.
Hello, am I audible?
Yes.
So on this first question on unwinding, again going back to the same point. Now, if I look at your 1H FY22 EV, which was around 5397 billion, and I reduce it by the mark-to-market that was sitting on your non-par book out there, the broadly core EV comes out to be around 2 trillion. Now, taking some assumptions on unwinding for 1H, on the base of 1248 billion without bifurcation and calculating the remaining unwinding, do we get broadly around 14% or 15% sort of unwinding on the core book, including a 12% on the real world excess return, which we saw in 2021? So is it fair to assume that if I strip off your EV from the mark to market and then give an unwinding of around 12-13%, that looks like a reasonable estimate?
This is Ashok. Actually, the way we look at unwind is normally what happens is it is the embedded value that moves through a year, and the releases that happens because of the unwind due to reference rate is one component, and the second component is the expected value return over the reference rate. Now, the number which you are talking about is excluding the bifurcation impact, right? Am I right in the understanding of your question?
What I'm saying is, should one look at unwinding excluding the unrealized gains that is sitting on your book? Because that will be included in your economic variance every year based on the market movements of these assets.
The economic variance will include two components. One component is mark-to-market movement, and the second component is A by E, where the expected best estimate basis and the actual return. So those two will come under economic variance.
See, what you're possibly trying to suggest is how to look it. I think it will leave it best to the analyst to decide it. But frankly speaking, if we want to strip off, or if for some reason for comparability you want to, you know, say suppose this 374 or 440 market value is removed, then actually the operating returns would be much higher, because if you can just look at the figures, the opening figure of embedded value was around 95,000 crore pre-bifurcation effect, and 55,000 crore is the operating, you know, release which is coming. Even for hypothetically, if we take away the impact of the one-off items or newly modeled items, is significantly higher amount of 25,000, 30,000 crores. And I think you have the calculators. You can calculate the ratio would be significantly higher than 12% for sure. So, yes, for sure, analysts would like to can see which portion, what they want to take as a denominator, what they want to take a numerator, which part they want to do. But what has been presented as of now is, as per the consistent market practices, so the comparability is there, and beyond that, analysis can be done. And this ratio is much stronger than what you are suggesting.
Sure. Second question on the VNB margins. You mentioned that 29% of expansion is due to the newly modeled businesses between FY21 and 22. Just as one of the participants mentioned, the unmodeled business was around 8 to 10% of your APE. So is it fair to assume that on the unmodeled businesses, the margin is a tad higher than your than your overall business that was modeled till 1H?
Yeah, this is Ashok. We modeled the 94, we selected the 94 products for the IPO. It was selected based on the contribution to reserves. And then that covered more than 91% of the reserves, and that was how it was decided. Now, when we added, because at some point in time we had to complete the entire process, and so we thought we will complete it by March 22, and all the products were taken into the system and modeled for the IEV March 22. Now, when we did this, we found out that there is quite a sizable portion of the VNB is coming from that business. And one, we have to understand one important thing in that is these unmodeled portions contain many products that are already in existence, and there are some products which are also open to new business. So there's a complete, there's a mix of it. So when I mentioned that it is 29% contribution, it is 29% contribution for the only products which contributed to VNB.
Sure. And just one last question from my side. If I look at your other variance of 50% which came from the release from the global reserves, how should one think of it, and is there any way, you kind of can quantify this number, as in what is sitting on your books today?
I've already explained. Global reserve is which is kept outside the contracts, because the contract, normally all the contracts individually are valued as per the IRDA regulations, and the global reserves are reserves that cannot be individually allocated to the contracts. Now, this global reserve, there will be movement in the global reserve based on the actuarial principles year on year, and these movements will be captured going forward.
Sure. Thank you, and all the best.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Madhukar Ladda from Elara Capital. Please go ahead.
Hi, good morning, sir. Thank you for taking my question. So I wanted to understand, a little better of how, non-par margins have created Is there a component of expected equity returns also in VNB computation? Because maybe the reason I'm asking is that, you know, the, before the TV fog, FC, CL, CR, and HR costs, if I look at the non-par margins, they're like at about 104% for FY22. So the first question is, are there any future expected equity returns built into the non-par margin?
See, this is Ashok. Actually, what happens is in the calculation of VNB, all the assets are projected at the reference risk-free rate and discounted at the risk-free rate. So naturally, any movement in the future movement in the market is not considered.
And if you have sort of an equity investment, would you build in a higher than expected return on that portion of the investment also for the future, or is it at risk-free rate?
See, the calculation of Indian embedded value is clearly specified, and guidelines were issued by the Institute of Actuaries of India through the Actuarial Practice Standard 10, and that clearly specifies that the reference rate shall be the risk-free rate which is considered. So any market movement that will during the year will be captured in the economic variance.
Okay, understood. Even on the group margin side, we've seen a good improvement. So if you look at FY21, you were at about 11.5%. This has gone to 19%. I understand that there is a board resolution for these certain group fund management business. So can you explain a little bit about that board resolution? And also, just for a fund management business, the margin, probably seems high. I may not understand this as well. So maybe you could explain that also a little bit, but how these are computed.
In case of group funds, we used to declare the interest rates on those funds. What you are referring, I think, is regarding the board-approved policy for crediting interest rates, where it is there is a clear-cut guideline on how the interest rate has to be declared and what is the margins we have to keep. So those things are reflected when the embedded value calculation for group funds is done, as well as the VNB calculations.
Yeah, so, was there an increase in your crediting rate which has resulted in an increase in margin? So effectively, if you're keeping a higher percentage of the profit, then your policyholders, you're taking a certain higher percentage of the policyholders' income, right?
See, this group VNB, the major contribution is through the change in RFR, particularly in group annuities. Because of the longer term, the impact of RFR was quite high under those products. As far as the interest rate crediting is concerned, this we thought is as a part of a good governance to have a clear-cut policy and to go by that.
Understood, Colin. And final question, sir, can you bifurcate between, back book surplus, new business strain, and the final result of policyholder surplus? Can you give that number?
See, for the purpose of embedded value, this new business strain and those numbers are not, right now we're discussing on that. So all the elements which contribute to embedded value are already in the part of, as a part of the report. New business strain and all those things will come as a part of the statutory valuation.
Yeah, so, okay, and can you, will it be possible for you to discuss that?
We can discuss it at a later point of time, possibly. Sure.
Okay, that's it from my side. Thank you.
Thank you. Next question is from the line of Nishin Chawate from Kotak Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah. Thanks for the opportunity. Three questions. First is, you mentioned that new products model had around 29% contribution to the VNB. So just to clarify, when we are saying that VNB of, you know, we had a VNB of 76 billion, 29% of that came in from the new products that were, you know, the new products that you modeled this year.
This is Ashok. Actually, it is, that 29% is the increase. That is the out of the increase, 29% is contributed by this, not the total base.
Sorry, so 29% of 76 billion or what?
76 minus 4100 which was there. So almost the 3500 which was there. Actually, just estimated, it's not exact that number.
No, no, got it. I think this is helpful. The other thing is, so the new products modeled, you know, these are products which were already in existence, but just that you had not modeled them in the previous years, right?
Yeah, yeah. Actually, you know, as Mr. Ashok has already clarified, LIC had around 252 products, it's a large list. So LIC had to go for an IPO, and the basis was that statutory, at that time we didn't have embedded value numbers. So statutory, while statutory reserves, 91% coverage was being provided, and maternity point act was covering almost 97-98% of the new business being sold. So as per the board approved policy on the maternity, so these products were taken. Subsequently, on this exercise when it got concluded, then all other products, remaining products, they were not new products. They were products which are existing at that point of time as of 31st March. They were newly introduced during the year also. Some of them were there. All of them were included, and the entire basket of 262 products was included for this current statutory valuation. So contribution from them, in fact, if you see, it's very consistent because if you take away this one, this you know, increase in market value or change in market value constituent of the EV, the 145, so it's around 14,000 crores, so almost in the, it's consistent with the reserving also. But let's note a point that statutory reserve basis and embedded value basis are different, so those numbers may not necessarily be exactly, you know, consistent with each other. So proportions can change as when we take as a value of the embedded value and when we take as a proportion to statutory reserve.
So that is fair, but I think the point I'm trying to kind of come to is that, you know, as a principle, this is not necessarily the, you know, the value added that by the corporation during the year, right? This was something that you've already been doing for the years, but just that you have taken cognizance of that today.
Yes, yes, yes. That's why it's a part of the, you know, embedded value calculation where it is being reflected, and very small portion in the VNB also, which is there. So it is not necessarily, which was not there, it was there, but it was not, you know, reflected in the earlier disclosures, because in a way that was, you know, that value was there, but because we had modeled only 94 products, so value for those products was seen at that point.
Sure. Just going back, you know, to the first point that we discussed, and this was essentially the 40,000 odd crore difference in the, you know, in the bifurcation calculation. You mentioned that almost half of it came in because of equity market movements. So maybe a different way to kind of do it, or probably, you know, different actuaries, I'm sure, have a different way of kind of looking at it. But it is also possible that, you know, some part of it could possibly, you know, be passed through the economic variance rather than kind of passing it through the diversification impact.
This is Ashok. Yeah, see, what happens is what we thought is we should show that as a part of disclosure so that the analyst and investors understand and clearly appreciate that where from these numbers are coming. So to enhance clarity and to make proper disclosures, it was shown there.
Yeah, but you could, I mean, in a normal course, probably, you know, in a normal course, probably a part of this 40,000, maybe 20,000 could go through an economic variance.
See, what happens, that's what we are saying is, there will be a distortion if we look at the opening and closing. To avoid that distortion, we showed that separate bifurcation impact. So going forward, what happens is that, for example, in the next year, the opening itself will be 5,41,000. So that those at that and during that year, whatever changes happens in the market movement will get reflected in the economic variance.
The economic variances would typically reflect the actuals from the investment. You're assumed and you're actually, you know, realizing. This variance shows generally unrealized things, which is not actualized, realized, but which is there as per the market value. So not necessarily that it would be in the economic assumption. They can be seen separately. Economic variance is result from actual experience.
Got it, got it. This clarifies. Thank you very much and all the best.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Ladies and gentlemen, due to time constraint, we'll take the last question from the line of Swarna Mukherjee from BNK Securities. Please go ahead.
Yeah, thank you, sirs, for the opportunity. My first question is related to the required capital and frictional cost of capital in your EV split. I wanted to understand why the numbers are zero in for this financial year, if you could throw some light on that.
Yeah, this is Ashok. Actually, the required capital frictional cost of required capital is an item that comes when the cash flows are projected. We look at whether there is any requirement that comes in order to meet the solvency ratio of 160%, which is the targeted solvency ratio. Since we have started with 185% currently, and these has given a cushion that has ensured that there is no further requirement of capital going ahead on the embedded value basis.
Okay, so sir, just to understand this required capital number in your case does not imply the solvency capital that is required to be held to cover the business, rather whether any additional amount of capital is required. Would that be a correct understanding?
Actually, as per actual practice standard 10 or as per the purpose of embedded value, the required capital reflects the regulatory minimum capital is 150 or higher of the two, or as per the board approved policy for that insurer. So in case of corporation, our target solvency ratio is 1.6. So our, you know, required capital has to be seen in this context. But actual solvency has been more than 185 or so. So in that context, the entire amount above that can be treated as like a free surplus. So it's, then the shareholder typically from the regulatory point of view is allowed to invest that money which is not tied up for the purpose of solvency to be invested even beyond, you know, provisions or investment regulations and all those things. So in that context, this is treated as free surplus. And therefore, the cost of capital, because it's not the shareholder's money is not regulatorily or in fact, you know, from the commitment point of view, not tied up for solvency. So therefore, the cost of capital, restriction cost of capital is not required.
Okay, sir. Got it. That's very helpful. Now, again, sir, coming back to the margins, VNB margin numbers, As you have already alluded regarding the group business, that the jump in the group gross VNB margin came from the fact that there was basically a contribution of RFR increase on the group annuity side. If you could highlight also what transpired in case of the PAR side, where there was a slight increase, as well as on the non-PAR side, keeping, say, the numbers reported in first half, vis-a-vis that why non-PAR margins came down slightly and PAR margins were seeing a slight uptick, if you could highlight that.
Yeah, this is Ashok. Actually, if we look at the corporation's portfolio overall, the savings component, savings business carries a bigger proportion, and the savings component is highly sensitive to interest rate movement, particularly when the interest rate moves favorably, the savings products are sold, it has an positive impact on the VNB margins. And the reason why it is impacting more on group annuities is because the annuity being a long term, and the long term contracts have a bigger impact due to the compounding effect, and that is one of the reason why the margins for annual group annuities are gone up slightly higher. In case of participating also, the margins have gone up higher, and the major reason is the RFR changes. In case of non-participating, we have the term assurance products as well as annuities sitting there. So the group annuities and individual annuities behave similarly, and the term assurance products are also giving a healthier margin, and that is also improving the margins for non-PAR business. So I think I've covered the
Yeah, sir, just this I understand vis-a-vis FY21 you have commented on. So for the non-par business, vis-a-vis what number was there at the end of first half, for first half you have reported, if you could throw some, only for the non-par side, if you could throw that first half gross margins were 118% for non-par. Now for full year, we are looking at 104%. So what was the reason for this delta?
Yeah, actually we have reported and we have analyzed for the full year, because that is consistent with the other comparisons which we are doing. Immediately I don't have those numbers with me, so possibly we can connect separately and we can discuss that.
Question, the sensitivity to interest rate for EV, both numbers are in the same direction, and you have mentioned in the comment that this is due to asymmetric impact of PAR TV fog. If you could help me understand in a little bit of less technical term, maybe what had happened.
Actually what happens is this time value of options and guarantees, it moves asymmetrically. What happens is when the interest rate falls, the cost of guarantees move up, because we would have guaranteed, say for example, we have guaranteed at say X percent, and the interest rate comes closer to X percent. So the potential time value of that option goes up. So what happens is when the interest rate goes up, the asset value goes down. So there is a sort of distortion here, and therefore the movement are not symmetrical here. It is caused because of the TV fog, which is the time value of options and guarantees.
Ladies and gentlemen, we'll take that as the last question. I now hand the conference over to Mr. M. R. Kumar, Chairperson, LIC, for closing comments.
Thank you everyone for being on the call today. I wish we could have taken more questions, but the time limitations did not permit us to do so. Maybe we can catch up later on next time on the call, the earnings call that we'll have after the Q1 results are financial declared. Thank you once again, everybody.
Thank you very much. On behalf of LIC, that concludes this conference. Thank you for joining us. You may now disconnect your line. Thank you.